Blog Talk Radio.
Radio tonight. This is our August the 15th show of 2015. We are excited to have as our guest members of the band We Are the Big Bang, an alternate soul band from Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. I think we have someone on from that band. Is there anyone on from the band? Hi, this is John. Anyone from the band on?
Hello.
And we are. Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. And who do we have from the band on?
This is Luis. I'm the guitar player.
Hi, Luis. Thanks for joining the show. Luis is.
Of course.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Luis is from the Los Angeles based alternative soul band We Are the Big Bang, and it's great to have you on. I love your music, and you guys have such a fresh sound. We opened
Thank
the show
you.
With Smoke, and just thanks a lot for being on. We got a lot to talk about.
Yes.
Now, why don't we start off, Luis, with introducing the band and the members of the band as it is right now, and then we'll kind of get into how the band got together.
Cool. So it's a six-piece. I know, it's a lot of people.
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So it's myself, Luis. I play guitar. We'll start with the rhythm section. We have Kyle, the drummer, Kyle Rector, from the Bay Area. We have Enrique Hinojosa, bass player from Texas. We got Oliver on keys. He's from everywhere, literally, like he's lived everywhere. I don't know why. And then we have our two beautiful front ladies, Cheyenne Melton and Elaine Faye. So that is the band.
Now, how did you guys get together? I mean, when you talked about, Luis, there were six members in your band. That's quite a few, but it's, if it works, it works, you know, and to get
exactly
the sound that you want. Yeah. How did you do this? I mean, how did you find the right musicians to fit what you wanted to sound like musically?
You know, it's funny. I mean, we get asked a lot that, and it's one of those things that you don't really plan. You know what I mean? I've never heard of anybody actually trying to. So how we started was, we all met in school at different times. It wasn't like we all went to school at the same time. I met Elaine at MI, and she was in this, like, singer-songwriter competition, and I was going there for guitar performance and guitar building and luthier and stuff like that. And I remember seeing her play and perform and thinking, wow, she's really good. And then thinking just, okay, cool, I wish her the best in this competition. And I left to go get drunk or something. It was a Friday night, so. And then a few weeks later, during, like, the new student orientation, because I had a buddy of mine who was just starting school as well, and I went with him to this new student orientation, and I saw her there. I was like, oh, cool, she won. So I went up to her and I started talking to her. And yeah, she got like third place. But I mean, I'm talking about like out of like 1,000 people that submitted.
Wow.
Or something. So that's how we started. And then I remember at one point she's like, oh, I have this gig in San Diego and I need a band. I was like, all right, whatever. I've never been to San Diego. Like, I'm down. She's like, all right, cool. So we kind of started playing together. We got a band, and then that's how it started. And then just like over time, like, you know, people just kind of started falling into place, and we had all played together in another band at one time or another. And that's kind of like the thing about LA, like, you just stay busy, you just try and, you know, get work where you can. But Elaine, though, I mean, she was just getting us gigs that, like, I mean, I was playing at the time, I was playing with this girl who was signed to Interscope. And even her, I mean, I won't mention her name, but even her she was asking us, like, how are you guys getting some of these gigs that Elaine was getting us? You know, they were well paid, they were cool. So it's just like, but yeah, no, I mean, we met, and then the drummer that we had at the time, Darren, kind of, he just wanted to do his own thing. So that's when Kyle was the last piece to kind of come into place. And then when he did, which this was maybe like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it just felt right. It was just like, boom, you know what I mean? It's just like looking around, like, at your team, and then just realizing, like, okay, I feel good. You know, I kind of, like, I always say, it's like, I feel like we're the Chicago Bulls team with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and some of these other guys were on. It just feels like, good. This is the team. This is it. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that makes
sense.
I don't
know if that answered your question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool, because I think, you know, I've been doing this show. I was just thinking about that. I'm going into the eighth year of interviewing, you know, independent musicians and groups from all over the world. I just love doing it, Luis. It's like the best thing I could do. I love talking music.
Awesome.
So yeah. So And one of the things that always comes up is that, you know, continuity within a band. You can get people that are really talented and really skilled, and you can get the people that you think will fit into the what you need in the skill set. But there's so much more to it because of the art part of it, and because of the it's like, okay, this person is pretty good and they sound good, but philosophically it's not fitting. It's not they're not what we need in the band.
Gelling. Yeah. And there's a beauty to that, you know. There's it's just that's what I'm saying. It's just like, just you know, no, and you have that a lot out here in LA where it's just like people trying to make these super bands or like, but and it's tough, but it's supposed to be tough. It's supposed to, cause, and that's what I mean. It's just like when you know, I mean, we've been together now going on 5 or 6 years. And I, for me, that's one of my big, like, one of the biggest compliments that we get as a band, that it's just like, what? Like, you guys have been together that long? In LA, yeah, especially, you know, because it's like, it's such a, like, people come in here, people move here, everybody's got the same attitude, which is good, you know, like, just, I'm going to be the next best thing, and blah, 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 and this and that, and it's just like, within 2 years, just like, bye, you know, people moving away, and they start blaming the city for everything that didn't work out for them. But, you know, I don't know. It's just, like I said, and I was in a band before in Texas, and we were together for 5 years. And when that band broke up, man, it hurt. Like, yeah. I compare it to, like, you know, some of my friends will, I've never been married, but, you know, I know I had a friend who went through, like, a pretty bad breakup. And I compare it to that, you know, where it's just like, because it hurt, man. When we broke up, like.
Yeah, it was a relationship.
Yeah. You know, so you put so much time and effort.
Yeah.
This current, like, form of this band right now is great. Like, we all love each other. We all respect each other. You know, I mean, we'll argue and things like that, but we're able to, we've gone to that point where we just talk it out. And we always figure it out. So,
yeah, that's how our families do it too.
It's
there's nothing wrong with that. You know, people say, well, you always have to be happy and all that. I don't think that's true. Musicians are different because, you know, you guys are going for this goal. You're coming together as a team. And like you said, you know, you guys have got to lay down kind of your individual things and say, okay, as a band, this is what we're going to do. And I think that's amazing when you see it. And one of the things, Luis, you can also feel it with a good band.
Yeah,
you know, I love like I made a thing to myself a couple of years ago. I'm not getting any younger, and all these bands that I grew up with aren't getting any younger. So I'm going to go see everybody I can. I mean, when they come around, I'm in Central Ohio near Columbus, and when bands come through, I'm going to go see them. I thought, you know, hey, you hear things all the time about it. You know, this guy's, he's sick or whatever. And there's nothing that I like more than to see a band that plays together, and you can feel it. I mean, it's just amazing to me. So that's really cool. Why don't we talk about? We'll take a music break here in a minute, Luis. But let's talk about you and how you got started in music. And one of the things in this show that I like to do is when people go back and listen to the podcast, you know, they'll hear the music from the band. But I also want them to know about the personal side of what makes a band, because it's made of people. And, you know, environment makes people, and life experiences make people, and singer-songwriters. And I always tell this story, Luis, about, you know, it's been some years back, and I was walking the dogs, and I had the radio on, and I heard it. I wasn't a big fan of Meatloaf, but I heard this interview about this, you know, Meatloaf, and I automatically thought, wow, I didn't know anything about the guy, and I started thinking about his music differently. His music meant totally, completely different to me after I heard the interview, and I listened to what he was all about and what his life was about. So that's what I try to do. So, let's talk about how, you know, your life and growing up and what impact music had on you.
That's fine. I mean, my dad was like the biggest, I mean, he still is just the biggest music lover. Like, he has the biggest vinyl collection.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's funny. I mean, I'm first generation Mexican. So my mom and dad, they're from Mexico, but my dad is the biggest Beatles fan that I know, you know. And but growing up, though, he never, that was like his thing. Like, he never really pushed it on us. He never forced, you know, just like kind of like, okay, that was his thing. That's what he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the background, there was always like music playing, like the Beatles and like, oh, just like this, like 70s music and stuff like that. So my biggest influence growing up was obviously my big brother. And he liked a lot of hip-hop, like Tupac and Biggie at that time. So naturally, I kind of started going towards that direction. And then I started playing music late. I mean, what do you consider late? But I was in high school. I was about to be a junior. And we had just gotten cable, finally. And I was watching MTV.
Yep.
And I was just like, you know, being introduced to like all this new music that I'd never heard of. And they were doing one of their like top 100 greatest videos of all time that they used to do. I don't know, they still do it, but, and we're thinking, oh, you know, like it's gonna be like Dr. Dre or Tupac or somebody like number one. And like the number one video was November Rain by Guns N' Roses. And it's such a cheesy song, I get it, whatever. But for me, though, like, I had never heard anybody play guitar like Slash.
Yeah.
Or just have that much attitude. And I was just like, what is this? Like, what? I don't understand. Like, what is this? And then I,
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
From that day, it just, like, I don't know, like, seeing a new color that you've never seen before. Just like, I was just like, that's it. That's what I want to do. That's it. Just like that, you know, just like the power of that. So I just dove into it, you know. Like, I remember my dad had like this beat up old acoustic. It was terrible, terrible, terrible. But I was like, it was like, whatever, you know, like I have to learn. I have to do this. So I remember I took the strings off and I sanded it down. It was this like yellowish, horrific color. And I sanded the thing down, and I was gonna paint it, make it look cool. And I pretty much ruined the guitar because I painted over the fretboard, I painted over the tuning keys. Like, I ruined the guitar. And then I remember I was like, okay, well, whatever, this is as good as it's gonna get. And then I was gonna put the strings back on, but I didn't remember how I took them off, and I just couldn't put it back, and then I snapped them, and
yep.
I made a mess, you know, and then I ruined the guitar. So I went to tell my dad, like, oh, hey, I kind of want to learn guitar, but I ruined this guitar, you know, keyboarding strings.
Yep.
So I ended up putting wire on the guitar, just like steel wire that he had. And then this is before YouTube, man. This is like AOL, like nobody used a phone because I'm going to dial up, you know, and
yeah.
I remember going online and then trying to figure out like how to tune a guitar and stuff like that. And like, that's how I kind of started teaching myself. Like, I remember I downloaded, it took like an hour to download this, like two sheets of like chord shapes. And I downloaded that, and that's how I taught myself.
Wow.
Just like the chord shapes themselves. Like, that's all I taught myself. I didn't know what they sounded because I didn't know how to tune the guitar, but like for like 2 months, that's what I did. I was just playing. And then finally my dad once was like, are you learning how to play guitar? Are you trying to? I'm like, yeah. I guess it's all bad, or just they just got so annoyed by the noise. That they bought me like at a flea market, like this like somewhat working guitar. And then that's how I kind of started just teaching myself. And, you know, I remember being in school and then, like, sitting, like, in, like, history class. And I love history. I've always said that, like, I mean, this is off subject, but, like, someday I'm going to be a history teacher when I'm, like, 60. This is the dream of mine. But I remember my history teacher at the time was such a punk. He was, like, such a butt. And he would always try and scare us. You know, like, you guys have to go to college. You guys have to do this. And, which is fine. I'm not against that. But just, like, using fear to kind of try and push you and motivate you, you know? And I was just like, in my head, I was like, no, like, I'm moving to L.A. and, like, I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be fine. You know? And it was, I was just so convinced. I was just so convinced that that's just what I was going to do. But now, like, and you know, like, just over time, it's cool because, like, now, like, I've done this full circle of, like, go through, like, the whole rock phase and when I was in school, you know, like, jazz and all these other stuff, like, just different genres of music. And then I kind of was cool. It's like I kind of discovered the Beatles on my own. And then, you know, like, now, like, me and my dad have this, like, super cool, dope connection to the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really, really, really cool. You know, and we got to play London in December? It was in December, and it was just so cool. Like, just go, you know, we went to Abbey Road, just like does and all these tours. So it was really cool sending my dad, like, a picture of, like, me at Abbey Road. It was really cool, you know. It felt amazing, and he was so happy. Music for me completely is just changed my life. It sounds so cheesy, but I always say that, you know, I didn't find music, but music kind of finds you in many ways, or what you're supposed to do in life. It just, if you allow it.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, and I actually really believe that. One thing, Luis, mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to was mm-hmm. when you were talking about when you heard Guns N' Roses and you heard Slash the first time. Now, a lot of people will, to me, that's really important because there are certain musicians, and I go back in my life, and I think of the same thing that people, it's like a head turner. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. And you stop and you think, now that's different. What is it? I mean, I had the same, like, I'm not a big Guns N' Roses fan, uh-huh. but when I heard Slash play, I knew there was something there. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it, but I know that it had a lot to do with, it was talent, plus it was attitude, plus it was, you know, I think it's the way he brought himself and the music came out. I mean, even without seeing him, what do you mm-hmm. think all that is? And when it makes somebody, like, his music stands out and he can play all kinds of different types of music. What was it that you, Luis, made you think, wait a minute, that's, what is that? Because that's that moment right there, like that moment of clarity where you think, like, you know, hearing certain musicians for the first time and just thinking, okay, now that's a different, completely different thing altogether. What do you think it was with him, or it is?
I think it's just soul, you know. I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, we talk about soul music, you know, and like R&B and blues, but I mean, I've always said soul music. I mean, I've heard metal bands that have so much soul.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard soul bands that have no soul. Like, seriously. Yeah. You know, it's just like I think when like, I mean, okay, like, I look at somebody like Slash, and I'm like, he's just him. He just reeks of him. Like, not in a bad way, not in a cocky way. He's just, like, I'm very hippie. Very, very hippie when it comes to stuff like this. And I think with him and other people that we admire, you know, and some other people that I look up to, like Michael Jordan, some of these other things, but they just are themselves. They have no choice. They have found themselves. And for somebody like Slash, I think that comes through his playing. Like, he doesn't have a choice. Like, he plays and people just listen. You know, like a good singer.
Yeah.
It's just...
I go back to Jimi Hendrix when the first mm-hmm. time I heard Jimi Hendrix play. And it was kind of like a religious experience because I seriously couldn't believe it. It was one of those things where it was like, I have to listen to this again.
Yeah.
What is it? And it's like music where, you know, like in my situation, sometimes I get to hear a lot of music and people send me music and I listen to it. But when I hear something that I think, oh, I'm going to listen to that again. Does that happen to you? where you're listening to something and you think, well, that's not enough, I got to listen to that song again.
Oh,
my
God,
what do you
yes.
think
And
that
then
is?
I'll listen to it like 10 times, and it's just like, okay, I better stop. There's other songs on this album, but the song is just so good, you know?
Yep.
There's so many variables. There's so many, like, you know, there's so many pieces to them. That's what's so hard. It's just like, it's like photography. Like, when you just capture a moment that's just undeniable, like, you just know. You know, I mean, we went to the studio, and, I mean, we were all convinced that there's a song on there that, I mean, it turned out great. But last December, we thought that was going to be, like, first single, you know, and then we recorded it. We recorded all the songs, and then even, like, off the bat, like, even, like, the scratch tracks, which is just things that you use for reference when you're recording in the studio, it just, like, No was one of our favorite songs. It was just like, oh, my God, that just sounds so good. And it's like, okay, cool. But you know, we need to spend more time on this other one. And it's just like, sometimes, and it's just, it's not up to you to decide, you know. It's one of those things where it's just like, and I mean, talent aside, you know, you can have the best producer and the best, I mean, engineer, studio, everything. But there has to be something there. And I think that, you know, comes from that person, you know, like, just understanding, I guess, or just being connected. Again, I mean, I know these are so, like, vague, terrible answers, but, you know, like, Jimi Hendrix, I mean, he was another one. I remember, like I said, I mean, I started with Slash, but then you start digging in, and then you start looking up, like, their influences, you know, you start reading their interviews, and, oh, he talked about this player or this band, and then you kind of start looking some of this stuff up, you know. Yeah, I remember the first time I heard Little Wing by Jimi Hendrix and thinking, oh, I was like, that's cool, but, you know, I mean, I don't have a friend to play that song with, because I thought it was two people playing that song.
That's amazing.
And so,
yep.
Yeah, and for, like, the longest time, I was just like, okay, yeah, no, like, someday, you know. And then I remember watching a video or a clip, like, on VH1, and then he was playing it. I was just like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what? What do you mean? It's just him? Like, it's just Jimmy? You know, like, you got it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's like, when you hear somebody like that, this is what I thought of Jimi Hendrix, Luis. It was like, you know, when you hear a really good vocalist, a really good singer, and they're singing, you know it's coming from their heart, and they're you talk about their soul. You know that. That's what I thought Jimmy did. Instead of singing, he was playing the guitar that way.
Yeah.
So his heart was coming out of the strings. And it wasn't like, okay, look how good I am. It's like, you listen if you want to, whatever you want to do, but this is me, and I'm playing it. And it was just so personal. And I think you hit on that. It was, you know, it was something that came from very deep. And I think when I listen to musicians, and especially vocalists, I mean, you can pick up on that. I can hear a lot of things, if the vocalist grabs me, it's like, wow, I can stop and listen to that. Well, my guest is Luis Munoz from the band We Are the Big Bang, and you can go on their website, wearethebigbang.com, and we played the title song from their EP Smoke. And if you want to go on their website, is there any place else? I know you got a Facebook page, Luis, and
we have Facebook, SoundCloud, all the, you know, we're on Spotify. There's no excuse not to hear this. You know, if you have a smartphone, you can look us up right now on Spotify. It's on there. We're on iTunes. You can buy the whole EP for $5. Man, I tell people, if you email me, like, I will I'll mail you a CD. Like, the point is to just get music across, you know? And that's it. There's so many. Pick your poison, deliver it. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to get it to you.
Well, that's you hit on a really good point about that with the music industry, and we could talk mm-hmm. about that. We're going to take a music break and play the song you talked about. No, but when I've talked to different musicians, and there are bands out there, everybody's in different situations. No one's in the same situation. But mm-hmm. some bands think, okay, I'm going to give my music away, and if mm-hmm. you know, get it out there and get the people to listen to it and build a mm-hmm. You know, a following that way. And then I've listened to – I've had people on this show that said, no, you're not getting my music until you, you know, I get paid for it. Because mm-hmm. – And I could see both sides of that, you know. Not as a professional musician, but I think that, you know, it's like recording studios aren't free, and you know, mm-hmm. it does take that. But what? How do you stand on that? Where's your stance on like where the music industry is today? And you know, like. There's so many bands. You talked about playing in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I interviewed a band, it's been a year or two ago. And they were mm-hmm. saying any given night in L.A. you could hear thousands mm-hmm. of bands, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 bands mm-hmm. could play in one night. And I thought, is yeah. that right? Is there that many?
There's a lot of music.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've lived out here 6 years now, and, you know, I remember when I first moved out here, a lot of the people that I met, you know, like they would always ask me, but they would tell me, like, this is a 10-year town. There's like a few people that told me that. It's like, are you willing to, from the day that you moved, you know, which is my first year here, and give yourself 10 years? Like, are you willing to do that? In my head, I was like, maybe for you, like, not for me. Like, I'm going to make it in, like, 3 years, you know, just a cocky, brand new, you know, this kid who just moved to the city. And now, you know, I mean, I've been out here for 6 years, and now it makes sense. And it is true. I tell people the same thing now. It is a 10-year town. Like, it just takes time. It just takes a lot of time, but it's supposed to, though. I mean, anything that's good, it's another thing. But as far as the music industry, from what I've experienced, where I stand, again, I emphasize this a lot, I'm very hippie. But I think I'm on the opposite side. I honestly think that if you are just solely relying on making money or making a living from your art, then you should leave and you should go away. You should go do something else. You do. I mean, and what I mean by that, it's like, I feel like, okay, if you're given this, or you were given this vision, or, you know, you're supposed to create it. I think it's selfish of people to think that it's just you, that this is just you, you know, like, and you can't do that. You can't become possessive of it. Like, if you created something beautiful, whether it's a painting, an art, or whatever you call it. Think about the things that influenced you: friends, family, a fight, an argument, or things that are happening in the world. Like, how could you do that? How could you limit yourself to just, you know what I mean? Like, okay, the only people that can hear it are just people that
pay for it.
And I understand. Don't get me wrong. I understand that, like, the recording process and things like that are very expensive. Yes, I get it. But, even some of the bigger acts, if you look at them, like, you know, like Jay-Z or Dr. Dre, like, yes, they're making money from their music, but if you actually look at, you know, like, they build empires. They have so much other stuff. They invest in things. Like, there's other forms of, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
yeah,
it's
great conversation, because this has been a big part of these, you know, when I talk to Luis about mm-hmm. this, you know, there are like this one, I was trying to think of the band. It was, they were from Philadelphia, and they had not charged anybody to see them. They had not charged for any of their music. Everything was free. Mm-hmm. And their idea,
yeah.
well, obviously they're getting money from somewhere, but
Yeah.
I don't know where. But their
Yeah,
whole
yeah.
idea was, okay, it's a spiritual thing. This is something that it's like it's almost like a channeling thing. It's like the
Yeah.
music is going through me, and I'm not going to charge you for listening to it here. And if you like it, you come and hear us. And you know, I'd have to go back and try to figure out if that's worked out for them. But yeah, I've had. One of the interesting things too, I've had just recently people on the show that have said, "Well, you know, I was a Nashville songwriter, so I would go there and I would sit in an office in a cubicle, and they would say, write a song about a dog and a, you know, and a cowgirl, and and you did it, and you get paid for that." And I've always thought, you talked about that, Luis, about the spiritual part of it, and about the music and the art. How would you even do that? I mean, just to take that and say, okay, I'm going to write this beautiful song, and then it's just like another part of work, and then I'll go to my next one. Because to me, you know, songwriting is such a, I guess it would be, to me, it's very mysterious how it happens. Now, how does songwriting work with you, Luis? How does the whole process work?
Well, I tend to think in like music, like you know, like lyrics and stuff like that. That's something that I'm trying to work on, you know. And that's, I mean, I admire both Elaine and Cheyenne because they're able to express themselves using words. And ultimately, that's all it is just expressing, you know. And honestly, when you go back with the whole music industry and things like that, I feel like, you know, maybe there's lack of substance, but because it's that, because the people who are in a position to say something don't have anything to say other than just, you know, like the means of why they're doing it. But, you know, and like, I don't know, I'll come up with, you know, I'll practice and, or I'll be playing, even anyway, like when I'm practicing guitar, and then I'll come up with something that's like, oh, that's kind of cool. Okay. So it's like, this little spark. And I'm like, okay.
Yep.
And then I'll stop practicing and then I'll record it, you know, and then I'll go back to practicing and then I'll revisit it later and start working on it. And it's cool. It's just like how it evolves, you know. As far as the band goes, you know, and then like somebody will have an idea, like Enrique. And then we'll be in rehearsal and then, okay, you know, we talk about it and it's cool to see. And then everyone just kind of starts to add their piece. And I think that's what's fun about being in a band. A lot of people are like, oh, isn't it hard? Like, because there's so many opinions. It is, but it's also fun because there's so many opinions. Because you had an idea of what it was going to sound like. And then by the end of it's like completely different. But you can't get married to your idea, though. And that's the issue that a lot of people do. Where they're like, that doesn't sound like anything like it. Then go right by yourself then, you know? But yeah, does that answer the question? I don't
Yeah,
know.
that's yeah. Well,
Yeah,
let's
okay.
take a music break and then we'll come back because we were talking about. I want to talk a little bit about Luis about going into the studio and you know when you did talk about like a producer or somebody kind of taking your ideas or your creative ideas and then kind of molding them away. It sometimes that's easy for people to do, and sometimes it isn't. And we'll be right back after this with my guest is Luis Munoz from the band We Are the Big Bang, and we're going to hear the song Node. Would you like to talk about that? You mentioned it a little bit, Luis.
No, yes. And we just filmed, or not filmed, we actually just premiered the music video for it, which was so much fun. So people are listening, go watch it. It's so funny. We're so proud of it. But the song No is one of those songs where the song that I was talking about earlier, where we knew it was a good song, but then by the time that it was done, as far as like mixed and mastered and all the production was on it, we're just like, whoa, we were not expecting this. It just sounds so good, you know? I know the song for Elaine, I know she wrote it about just people just kind of like drag you down as far as like relationships, and then you just have enough. You're just like, I'm over it. You know, everyone I think reaches that point, but yeah, and it's fun. It's like a Bruno Marsy, dancey pop rock song. I don't know. It's cool. I dig it. I love my guitar part too. So simple, oh, but it's awesome.
We'll be, and this is Noah, and this is from the band We Are the Big Bang, and we'll be right back to continue our interview with Luis right after this. EP, which is Smoke, and you can go on their website, wearethebigbang.com. Now, Luis,
yes,
we started off when you were talking about your first guitar and how you tore it apart and painted it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you Where are you right now? Let's just have a little bit of gear talk. What are you playing right now, and what are you playing it through?
So I play a Gibson Les Paul. Man, I started with Strats, you know, which is funny. I mean, okay, so Slash, you know, Les Pauls and everything. And then on my path to my tone search, I found this guy, John Frusciante from Chili Peppers. And he was another big influence of mine. And I remember when I heard them, I was like, I want a Strat more than anything else in the world. So I became a Strat guy. I played that forever. And then during this record, just like we needed just like a meatier, fatter tone, so I just picked up this Les Paul. So my day job, what I do for a living out here now, after ruining my dad's first guitar. Actually, the irony is now I'm a guitar tech luthier, so I fix and build guitars out here.
Wow.
And yeah, it's fun. And this lady actually brought me this guitar, this Les Paul with a broken headstock. And I told her, you know, I quoted her, like, it's like about $300. And she's like, oh, that's too much. I'm like, lady, this is like a $2,500 guitar. Like, it's not a lot. She's like, my son doesn't even play it. Like, would you buy it for me from Mike? I'm like, yeah. And I was thinking, well, you know, even if I offer like a grand and, you know, I fix it myself, like, I'm still winning. And she's like, well, I'm like, well, how much you want? She's like, I don't know, repair, I guess. I'm like, $300. Like, are you sure? I didn't mind you. I'm not, you know, I'm trying to take advantage of her. Like, I tried offering more. She's like, that's fine. Doesn't matter. So anyways, so I bought the Les Paul, fixed it, and now I play it. I play it through this little 87 Ampeg guitar / accordion amp. One channel, all tube, 65 watts, and then just pedals. I'm always switching. Gear talk, I mean, I talk about all day OCD, exotic pedals, like a whole bunch of stuff. And then just this is what's funny, just when you think, okay, this is perfect, I found it. I found my perfect tone. Something else comes along, and it's just like, now I want that. Now I want to sound like this. And then it becomes, you know, you search yet again. But that's what I'm rocking right now.
No, I think that's great. I love that because it's like this morning I was listening to some. It's like I'll get the same thing. I'll hear a chord, and I'll think, oh my God, where did that come from? What's he playing it through? And and it's I just recently heard Jefferson Starship at a concert not too long ago.
Nice.
And Paul, and Paul Kantner has been playing, you know, since the mid '60s. And he was playing a Rickenbacker through, I think it was a couple of twin reverbs, and it was so amazing, Luis. I couldn't get over it. I was like, you know what I mean? It's like he didn't have a stack. He didn't have. It was just a pretty simple setup, and it was so pure. And I know exactly what you're talking about. You hear that chord, and you hear it, and you think, I gotta make it sound.
Exactly.
I gotta get there.
Exactly.
How do I get there?
Exactly. No, immediately. You know, we just played with this band, The Sufferers, from Houston, at the Roxy, and he was sound checking, and I was upstairs, and I came downstairs just to hear it because it sounded so good. You know, and seeing his pedals and his setup, and you know, in my head, I'm already thinking, well, what do I have that I can sell right now that I can? You know, it's just like, okay, so I know it never ends, but it's cool though.
Oh, it's definitely an addiction. You got to get to a point where, you know, when you know the UPS driver by name, you know you've got a problem.
Exactly.
It's been great talking to you. We got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to get into some of the things that's going on with the band right now. Luis, what are some of the projects or some of the things that people can look forward to or you're working on for the future?
So we are planning a Pacific Coast tour. Again, we're going up to Seattle, I think, even further, I think, in September. So that's what we're kind of planning on right now. We just did the CD release and the music video premiere stuff here in L.A., but we're going on tour in September. And then I personally, I'm hoping that we go to tour Texas, because that's where I'm from. Me and Enrique, so, and I know we would do so well over there, so I'm trying to send us down there, figure out a way to get us down there, and then writing new music, or, I mean, we have a whole bunch of new songs. It's just that whole process of, again, you know, of, all right, cool, well, recording and finding the time and the money to do it yet again, so...
Well,
and
how did you?
That's the thing. Second.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you were talking about the different songs and maybe some songs that you have for the next CD or the next EP. How did you come up with the ones that you decided on for the EP Smoke? I mean, how did you, as a group and as a band, come up and say, this is the songs we're going to use? Because I don't think that would be an easy thing to do sometimes.
It's not, you know, because you tend to, like I said, I mean, everything that we create, you know, it's hard not to see it as your baby, you know, and it's hard. You want everything on there. That's why I think having a good producer helps, because it's good to have that outside perspective and that person that's not attached to the songs like you are, in that sense, you know. So having that fresh set of ears tell you, well, this is a good song, but this one's better, you know. And I know and it's usually that, you know, you write like about 10, 15 songs and then you pick your best five. You know, and the more you do it, the more you just get used to it. That's something I've learned as far as songwriting. What used to throw me off so much was just, I learned very visually, like I have to, but I would see these, like, lyrics, you know, that these people would write, you know, like pictures of them or whatever. And it always seemed like it was just, like it just flowed from beginning to end. So it's just, like, when I would write lyrics, it didn't work that way. And it was just, like, mumble-jumbled, and I had, like, arrows pointing here, and then things crossed out, and, like, messy, you know? But now it's just like, and it's kind of like that. Like, people rewrite lyrics all the time, but the process is that. It's just, it's messy. It's a whole bunch of ideas just because you have to get them out. You just have to get them out of your head, I guess. And songwriting and writing songs is kind of like that. Like, sometimes you have to write 10 songs to have that one good song. You know, it's just necessary for us anyways. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody out there that just can write a hit almost, you know,
not maybe a couple, but not too many.
Yeah.
Was it easy, Luis, when you're working on something? You talked about how the producer can bring a new perspective, and somebody, you bring somebody in to do that. I know, and you also talked about your songs being your babies. Is it easy for that? Because it's like they're saying, well, you need to comb their hair that way or put this clothes on it. You know what I mean? And you're thinking, no, that's not the way I want it to be. How easy or how difficult is that to listen to somebody else's opinion and maybe use that in the song?
I think it's something that you learn, you acquire, you know. I think it comes with maturity. As you mature as a musician, you understand that that's just necessary, and it's good. It's a collaboration. You know, because I mean, even myself, I've worked with a few people that are just nasty, that they just, it's just not fun to work with because they're so close-minded and they're so, you know, and it's that. It's like you end up being one of those people that's like, okay, cool, you have 100 songs, but you don't want anybody to touch them, and you're looking for the right perfect situation, like the perfect storm that doesn't exist. When reality, it's just like, just write a whole bunch of songs and get people involved. And you know, like we were talking about earlier, you just know, like, and there's nothing wrong with trying things. You know, Daryl's a producer. Like, he's so much fun to work with, you know, and he always talks about that. Like, he always says, like, before he's about to say something, he's like, all right, no ego, no ego. Everyone cool, no ego, right? And then, no. And then, you know, it's like, okay, if you guys don't like my idea, you guys can tell me to get the hell out. You know, like, he'll say, like, things like that. And then he'll just say what he thinks it is, and then we'll try it. And then we just know if it works, you know. But that's what I'm saying is like, because we have also been in that position where you're so not sure and so green and so fresh that you just want to trust somebody. And then you do, and then it's just like that's you, you know. It sounds nothing like you. Trust me, there's songs that some people will never hear that we have recorded because You know, when we were younger, when we, you know, like two or yep. 3 years ago, you know, working with just young producers as well. It just, you know, it becomes this like game of like, okay, just flexing my muscles here and nobody wins.
Well,
but,
Luis,
yeah.
It's been great talking to you. I really appreciate you coming
Likewise,
on the show.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun, and we'll keep up with the band, and you know, keep me in the loop, and when you guys, we'll definitely have you on again. So thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to say to the people out there in closing?
We love everybody. Thank you so much. It's so cool. It is honestly very, 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 very awesome to, you know, even like people that comment on like, when they buy your album, like, I know it's just $5, but, like, leaving a comment, like it means a lot. It really, really does. Like, not in an egotistical way, but it's just, it's awesome knowing that people are actually listening.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's cool, man. We love everybody. Just want to thank everybody. Like, thank you, everybody. That's it. I love everybody. Always.
Well, thanks, Luis. I appreciate it. And say hi to the rest of the band, and we wish all the best for you. And we'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone, for supporting independent music and listening to John Talk Radio. And everybody have a great evening. Take care.
Thank you.
Cause there's no comfort without some explanation.